From the Voice of America, this is Learning English Weekend. I'm Katie Weaver in the Learning English studio with Mario Ritter. Hi, Mario.
Hello.
What's happening on the show today?
Well, our program is sweet and soulful. Marcia James reports on a recent chocolate festival just outside Washington, D.C. That should be delicious.
And I'm going to play you a little Grammy-nominated music from a new R&B singer who got a surprising start in the industry.
But first, we have some news to cover. There was a historic meeting Friday in Cuba. It could help heal a 1,000-year-old religious dispute. Katie, what can you tell us about the Pope and the Patriarch?
Mario, the leaders of the Roman Catholic Church and the Russian Orthodox Church met for the first time in history. Pope Francis and Patriarch Kirill sat down together Friday in the Cuban capital, Havana. The meeting is part of an effort to heal a 1,000-year-old dispute between the two churches. That is when Eastern and Western Christianity divided. Cuban President Raúl Castro and Cardinal Jaime Ortega, the Vatican's highest representative in Cuba, met Francis as he arrived at the airport. Then the Pope and Patriarch greeted each other with hugs and kisses. A short time later, they held a 2-hour personal discussion. They were expected to unite in an appeal for an end to killing and other violence against Christians in the Middle East. Officials of both churches announced the meeting between the two religious leaders a week ago. But it had been planned for 2 years in secret. Kirill arrived in Cuba Thursday for an official visit. Francis stopped there on his way to a 5-day visit to Mexico. Pope Francis was influential in Cuba's decision to reestablish ties with the United States. Now, he is seeking to repair a much longer break in relations. Eastern Orthodoxy split with Rome in 1054. Today, the Russian Church has about 165 million of the world's 250 million Orthodox Christians. The Roman Catholic Church has more than 1 billion followers. Russian President Vladimir Putin has supported the Russian Orthodox Church. In exchange, the Church has supported Putin's foreign policy, including positions on Ukraine and the Middle East. Putin has also improved Russian relations with Cuba, which were damaged following the collapse of the Soviet Union in 1991.
Recently, the World Health Organization announced that the Zika virus is a global health emergency. The WHO predicted that Zika could infect as many as 4 million people across the Americas this year. Christopher Jones Cruz has details about some new research on the disease.
Researchers in Slovenia say they have found some evidence of a link between the Zika virus and an increase in some birth defects. They published the study this week in the New England Journal of Medicine. The journal also published a report from a group of American health experts that supports the Slovenian research. The researchers studied a woman who was infected with the Zika virus. She had an abortion after an examination showed the fetus had severe health problems. They said the mother and members of her family had not had the health problems found in the fetus, and the researchers believe that neither the woman nor members of her family had been infected with any other viruses that cause health problems in fetuses. When the researchers examined the aborted fetus, they found the Zika virus. And they found that it had only attacked the brain. They believe this is strong evidence that the virus causes birth defects. But they said more study must be done to confirm their beliefs. People infected with the Zika virus suffer from fever, rash, joint and muscle pain, and red eyes. It is not a severe illness, but because of its possible link to birth defects, experts believe it is a great danger to pregnant women. The World Health Organization said the virus could be linked to 4,000 suspected cases in Brazil of microcephaly, a condition in which babies are born with very small heads. It causes severe brain damage. In February, the WHO said the virus is a global health emergency, and it predicted that Zika could infect as many as 4 million people across the Americas this year. The declaration meant more money and other help would be given to fight the virus. But the health agency did not say there should be a ban on travel or trade in areas where the virus is present. Some health experts say pregnant women, or women trying to get pregnant, should not travel to Brazil. The 2016 Summer Olympics are taking place in the South American country. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz.
As Christopher noted, the Brazil Olympics could be affected by Zika. Learning English's Dan Friedel has more on that.
National Olympic committees are discussing whether to send their athletes to the Games. Brazil reported the first case of Zika virus in May 2015. The World Health Organization, WHO, said the virus could be linked to 4,000 suspected cases of microcephaly in Brazil. Microcephaly is when babies are born with small heads. Their brains do not develop properly. It is a form of brain damage. Last week, the WHO declared the spread of Zika a global public health emergency. It said the virus could infect as many as 4 million people across the Americas. The news came as Brazil's second largest city, Rio de Janeiro, is getting ready to host the Olympic Games in August. Brazil President Dilma Rousseff said her entire government is working on fighting this emergency, and its sports minister said the country has no plans to cancel the Games. Alan Ashley is the sport performance director for the U.S. Olympic Committee, USOC. He said to the Reuters news agency that no athletes should go to Brazil if they don't feel comfortable going. The USA women's soccer team had an Olympic qualifying game against Costa Rica earlier this week in Texas. There, many American athletes were asked if they were concerned about Zika. Hope Solo is the goalie for the U.S. national team. She has won 2 Olympic gold medals and helped the USA team win the Women's World Cup last summer. Solo said, even though she has no plans to become pregnant, she might not go to Brazil unless conditions related to Zika change. If I had to make the choice today, I wouldn't go, she told Sports Illustrated before the game. I would never take the risk of having an unhealthy child. Solo explained that women athletes have different considerations than men. Competing in the Olympics should be a safe environment for every athlete, male and female alike. Female athletes should not be forced to make a decision that could sacrifice the health of a child. And the USOC said it is taking the threat of Zika seriously. Team USA won the most medals at the 2012 Olympics in London, finishing ahead of China 103-88. If some key athletes from the USA do not attend the Olympics, it could affect the standings. In Kenya, officials said it is too early to consider not going to the Games. Also, the Olympics will take place during the Southern Hemisphere's winter, which should limit the mosquito population due to cooler weather. I'm Dan Friedel.
He don't know I call him the teacher. He had hard lessons for the kid.
Andra Day's life changed when Stevie Wonder called her on the telephone. The music superstar asked Day if he could work with her. That was almost 6 years ago. Stevie Wonder had heard about the singer from his wife at the time, Kai Millard Morris. She had discovered Day in a short video. Andra Day said her talk with Stevie Wonder inspired her. I was so nervous, she said. I kept saying to myself that he's just a regular person. But in the same breath, I was saying, he's a legend. I felt like a meteor hit my house. It inspired me to keep pushing. A year later, Wonder introduced Day to longtime producer Adrian Gervitz. He signed her to his company, Buskin Records. Now her career is taking off. The 31-year-old singer is nominated for 2 Grammy Awards, Best R&B Album for her debut, Cheers to the Fall, and Best R&B Performance for the single, Rise Up. Day and Grammy nominee Ellie Goulding will sing together at the awards ceremony. The Grammy Awards are on February 15th. Until then, Day is preparing for her upcoming 35-city show tour. Day has also performed in commercials with Stevie Wonder and Serena Williams. Over the holidays, the Obama family asked Day to perform in 2 White House events, including the 2015 National Christmas Tree Lighting Ceremony. Now Marcia James takes us on that tasty tour of a chocolate celebration near Washington.
This chocolate festival took place recently in McLean, Virginia. Visitors started by learning about cocoa beans, the main substance used in chocolate.
And inside is about 20 to 40 cocoa beans. And you see the white color here is actually the pulp on the outside of the bean.
The visitors got to see how the beans are separated from their husk and then broken into smaller pieces. These cocoa nibs are ground on a heated stone. Spices and other ingredients are added to produce a block of chocolate. The festival goers learn how chocolate was used mainly as a drink up to and through the 1880s. That was before the first candy bar was manufactured and sold. That sound is David Borsani, a chocolate historian, hitting a block of chocolate.
It's just a little too hard for us to eat like a candy bar. So in colonial chocolate making, they would have taken a chocolate block similar to this one and grated it to make a fine chocolate powder.
The chocolate particles are then mixed with hot water in a container.
We found an authentic colonial recipe partnering with the folks at Colonial Williamsburg. The recipe dates back to the 1750s, and it's a recipe that actually documented 9 different seasonings and spices in the recipe.
People who tasted the drink seemed pleasantly surprised.
Oh, it's delicious. It's very good. It's very spicy and rich and not too sweet. It's been great for the kids. They've enjoyed trying different chocolates and then learning about the, you know, how their favorite treats are made. Very educational.
In a separate room, visitors also have a chance to taste and purchase chocolate products from local dealers. Lynn Hendricks is the president of the Rotary Club of McLean, which organizes the yearly festival.
The proceeds from this event will help fund not just our local projects, but some international projects as well. For example, we have built a dental clinic in Swaziland, Africa. We also have the medical brigade, which is in the Honduras, partners for surgery in Guatemala. We have bought computers for low-income schools in Greece.
I'm Marcia James.
And now it's time for American Stories. Today, we have a story called Paul's Case by Willa Cather. Here's Kay Gallant.
Paul hated school. He did not do his homework. He did not like his teachers. Paul's father did not know what to do with him. His teachers did not know either. One afternoon, all his teachers at Pittsburgh High School met together with him to discuss his case. Paul was late. When he entered the room, his teachers sat waiting for him. He was tall for his age and very thin. His clothes were too small for him, but they were clean. He had a bright red flower in the buttonhole of his black jacket. One of the teachers asked Paul why he had come to the meeting. Paul said politely that he wanted to do better in school. This was a lie. Paul often lied. His teachers began to speak. They had many complaints. One said Paul talked to the other students instead of paying attention to the lessons. Another said Paul always sat in class with his hands covering his eyes. A third teacher said Paul looked out the window instead of looking at her. His teachers attacked him without mercy. Paul's eyebrows moved up and down as his teacher spoke. His smile never left his face, but his fingers shook as he touched the flower on his coat. At last, the meeting was over. Paul's smile got even wider. He bowed gracefully and left the room. His teachers were angry and confused. The art teacher spoke for all of them when he said there was something about Paul that he didn't understand. "I don't think he really means to be bad," he said. There's just something wrong with that boy. Then the art teacher remembered one warm afternoon when Paul had fallen asleep in his class. Paul's face was white with thin blue veins under the skin. The boy's face looked tired and lined, like an old man's. His eyebrows moved up and down, even in his sleep. After he left the meeting, Paul ran down the hill from the school, whistling. He was late for his job at the concert hall. Paul was an usher there. He showed people to their seats. He carried messages for them. He brought them their programs with a polite bow. Everyone thought he was a charming boy and the best usher at the hall. When Paul reached the concert hall that evening, he went immediately to the dressing room. About six boys were already there. Paul began changing his clothes with excited hands. He loved his green uniform with the gold pockets and design. Paul rushed into the concert hall as soon as he had changed clothes. He ran up and down the hall, helping people. He became more and more excited. His face became pink, and his eyes seemed larger and very bright. He looked almost handsome. At last, everyone was seated. The orchestra began to play, and Paul sat down with a sigh of relief. The music seemed to free something in Paul's spirit. Then a woman came out and began to sing. She had a rich, strong soprano voice. Paul felt truly happy for the first time that day. At the end of the concert, Paul went back to the dressing room. After he had changed his clothes again, he went outside the concert hall. He decided to wait for the singer to come out. While he waited, he looked across the street to the large hotel called the Schenley. All the important people stayed at the Schenley when they visited Pittsburgh. Paul had never been inside it, but he used to stand near the hotel's wide glass doors. He liked to watch the people enter and leave. He believed if he could only enter this kind of a hotel, he would be able to leave school, his teachers, and his ordinary gray life behind him forever. At last, the singer came out of the concert hall. Paul followed her as she walked to the hotel. He was part of a large crowd of admirers who had waited to see her. When they all reached the hotel, she turned and waved. Then the doors opened and she disappeared inside. Paul stared into the hotel as the doors slowly closed. He could feel the warm, sweet air inside, and for a moment he felt part of a golden world of sparkling lights and marble floors. He thought about the mysterious dishes of food being served in the hotel's dining room. He thought about green bottles of wine growing cold in silver buckets of ice. He turned away from the hotel and walked home. He thought of his room, with its horrible yellow wallpaper, the old bed with its ugly red cover. He shook his head. Soon he was walking down the street where he lived. All the houses on Cordelia Street were exactly alike. Middle-class businessmen had bought them for their families. All their children went to school and to church. They loved arithmetic. As Paul walked toward his house, he felt as if he were drowning in ugliness. He longed for cool colors and soft lights and fresh flowers. He didn't want to see his ugly bedroom or the cold bathroom with its cracked mirror and gray floor. Paul went around to the back of his father's house. He found an open window and climbed into the kitchen. Then he went downstairs to the basement. He was afraid of rats, but he did not want to face his own bedroom. Paul couldn't sleep. He sat on the floor and stared into the darkness until morning came. The following Sunday, Paul had to go to church with his family. Afterwards, everyone came home and ate a big dinner. Then all the people who lived on Cordelia Street came outside to visit each other. After supper, Paul asked his father if he could visit a friend to get some help with his arithmetic. Paul left the house with his school books under his arm, but he didn't go to his friend's house. Instead, he went to see Charlie Edwards. Charlie was a young actor. Paul liked to spend as much time as he could at the theater, where Charlie Edwards and his group acted in their plays. It was only at the theater and the concert hall that Paul felt really alive. The moment he smelled the air of these places, he felt like a prisoner suddenly set free. As soon as he heard the concert hall orchestra play, he forgot all the ugly, unpleasant events in his own life. Paul had discovered that any kind of music awakened his imagination. Paul didn't want to become a musician, however. He didn't want to become an actor, either. He only wanted to be near people who were actors and musicians. He wanted to see the kind of life these artists led. Paul found the schoolroom even worse after a night at the theater or the concert hall. He hated the school's bare floors and cracked walls. He turned away from his dull teachers in their plain clothes. He tried to show them how little he thought of them and the studies they taught. He would bring photographs of all the actors he knew to school. He would tell the other students that he spent his evenings with these people at elegant restaurants. Then he would announce that he was going away to Europe or to California or to Egypt for a while. The next day, he would come to school smiling nervously. His sister was ill, he would say, but he was still planning to make his trip next spring. Paul's problems at school became worse. Even after the meeting with his teachers, things did not get better. He told them he had no time to study grammar and arithmetic. He told them he had to help the actors in the theater. They were old friends of his. Finally, his teachers went to Paul's father. He took Paul out of school and made him get a job. He told the manager at the concert hall that Paul could not work there anymore. His father warned the doorman at the theater not to let Paul into the place. And Charlie Edwards promised Paul's father not to see Paul again. All the actors at the theater laughed when they heard about the stories Paul had been telling. The women thought it was funny that Paul had told people he took them out to nice restaurants and sent them flowers. They agreed with the teachers and with his father that Paul's was a bad case.
And that's all the time we have today. I'm Katie Weaver.